Space versus Abdul Fariz, Mr. Mandel.
May it please the court, I'm David Mandel and I represent the appellant Salim Abdul Fariz. Your Honor, Mr. Fariz was arrested de facto following a Terry stop. We assert that the scope and the duration of the stop were unlawful. The purpose of the stop was to check a vehicle for weapons and to identify the occupants. The Stark County Police Department received a very vague report from what they thought was Richland County or from Grant County about a possible shakedown involving a vehicle where a weapon may have been displayed. They stopped the vehicle, they searched the occupants, they questioned them, no weapons were found, everyone denied there was a weapon involved. During this whole period of time, Mr. Fariz was handcuffed in the back of a cruiser. This was a felony stop where they were dragged from the vehicle at gunpoint, laid on the ground, cuffed, and put into a police car. This concluded at 3:30 in the afternoon, despite the fact that the original reason for the Terry stop was dispelled, that no gun was found, that there was no evidence to further their investigation that a crime had occurred. They continued to hold Mr. Fariz against his wishes, despite his request to leave. At approximately 3:47, a police officer from Richland County shows up with new information. The Stark County officers had no idea that this gentleman was even coming. They received no communications during this whole period of time. It was fortuitous for the police that this officer arrived on the scene, but it's our assertion that Mr. Fritz was in fact placed illegally under arrest during this period of time.
Well, this involves multiple jurisdictions in terms of this investigation, and doesn't that make the duration, because we're talking about a time period of under 20 minutes here, the fact that there were other jurisdictions involved, the fact that the two co-defendants or the other people in the car were giving inconsistent statements, doesn't that make the timing of the detention more reasonable?
No, Your Honor. First of all, they didn't know that it was a multi-jurisdictional. They thought it was a Grant County and Sauk County. Sauk County was merely asked to stop this vehicle, check the occupants for their identity, and to determine whether there was a weapon present. The statements made by the occupants that were inconsistent occurred after the Richland County officer appeared on the scene.
So it was after he appeared?
After he appeared, and it was about whether or not they had seen Julie Hooks that day, who was not even reported to be present when the alleged crime occurred. It was irrelevant, these inconsistent statements. So I don't see why that helped further their investigation as to whether or not a crime occurred with a weapon. Following that, the search warrant that was applied for had false allegations that these were ordinary citizens in order to bolster the credibility of Mr. Hooks and Mrs. Hooks. And these clearly were not ordinary citizens. And to merely state that they were felons or known associates, I don't think really conveys to the judge the true nature of their statements. Mr. Hooks was a felon who had been accused of being a felon in possession of firearms. His statements were made to point the blame at somebody else and exculpate himself, which was not conveyed to the judge. The fact that he's a felon does not mean he's not necessarily an ordinary citizen, unfortunately, in our society. But what should have been conveyed was this gentleman was arrested and was alleged that he was a felon in possession. And it only takes a few seconds to check nowadays with computers what somebody's criminal record is. So I think the statements made were clearly and deliberately false. In support of the affidavit, it's not bolstered by the fact merely stating it was a felon or they were known associates, they were caught together or stopped together. So I don't believe if applying Franks and you take that statement and put in the truth, a judge would have been able to say, yes, this is grounds to issue a search warrant, because Julie Hooks is saying her husband has the guns, and she purchased them, and of course they had the receipt from her, but they didn't have the receipt for the safe, other than after Mr. Ferrez was in custody in Richland Center and they found it on his person, and based on his illegal arrest, without that information, they had very little to issue a warrant to search his house. And finally, there was no proper notice given of the drug offense penalty enhancement pursuant to 21 U.S.C. 851. While there was some general discussion regarding the penalty, it wasn't in the plea agreement. It didn't state for which prior offense the enhancement was for. Mr. Ferrez had two prior drug convictions. I think it's a requisite. It wasn't given. And without that notice, that's plain error. I don't believe there was a waiver here. This was a case of a forfeiture, not a waiver. It was a failure to make a timely assertion of a right, not a knowing strategic move. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mandel. Mr. Anderson?
Good morning. I'm Robert Anderson. I'm an assistant United States attorney. I have the privilege of representing the United States in this matter. I'll deal with the three primary issues which are present before us: whether the district court correctly found that the Terry stop and detention was not unreasonable constitutionally under the circumstances, whether the district court correctly decided that there was no material misstatement or omission of facts in the search warrant affidavit, and whether this court even has jurisdiction to consider the 851 challenge, and even if so, whether that challenge has any merit.
Can you, on that first issue, tell me whether the deputies at the scene at the time of the stop knew that that other detective was en route? I think his name was Sedgepick.
Yes. Now, it's interesting, both Mr. Mandel and I were involved in the case, but it seemed like those were different facts than what were coming out at the hearing from what I heard and then from what he heard.
So what's
Deputy Sedgepick, at page 41 of the transcript, when he was interviewed, indicated that he communicated to his dispatch that he was going to the scene and he wanted Abdel Ferrez in Richland County custody. Now, we do have three different rural agencies involved here. We have Grant County, Richland County, and Sauk County, and they're communicating with their dispatch, and their dispatchers are communicating with one another.
Right, and so was there any dispatcher that then told those on the scene at the time that they were detained that Sedgepick wanted him to remain there? Is there any evidence of that?
The record, if you read the record of the hearing and Deputy Stoddard's testimony, he knew he was stopping them for Richland County. He even said in his testimony that he became aware that it wasn't Grant County, it was Richland County, from the dispatcher. And he knew he was holding them for Richland County. He did not know. It definitely doesn't say in the transcript that he knew Deputy Sedgepick was on his way there.
All right. What about the timing of the two inconsistent statements? Did those interviews take place after Sedgepick arrived?
Before he arrived.
Before, because counsel said no. So what do you base that on in the record? What testimony?
The chronology that was set out by Deputy Stoddard. He indicated we have, there's the stop. We have three different law enforcement agencies. We specifically have Abdel Ferrez's license plate number, and the officers knew that car, and they knew Abdel Ferrez. They stopped that car at 3:10 p.m. The chronology of the clock starts there, 3:10 p.m. He then says, so they correctly anticipated that Abdel Ferrez was heading back to his residence and intercepted him at that time. Meanwhile, in Richland County, they're continuing their investigation by having a separate deputy go over and talk to the victims and get more specific information. When the vehicle is stopped back in Sauk County, we have what Deputy Stoddard described as a felony stop. And quite contrary to the testimony, Mr. Mandel characterized them as being dragged out of their car at gunpoint. They conducted a felony stop, and Deputy Stoddard was very careful, especially in response to Mr. Mandel's cross-examination, that they were doing this quickly. He said, no, we were doing it slowly and carefully because there was a danger there if there was a gun in that car. The felony stop, they kept their guns on them, and each one of the three individuals get out of the car one at a time. Deputy Stoddard said it took 3 to 4 minutes, I believe is his testimony, to get each individual out of the car.
So, and in this narrative, are we going to get to the inconsistent statement in
okay.
the timing?
They get them out of the car, separate them in different cars, and then they conduct a search of the vehicle. That's another 8 to 12 minutes to conduct that search. Then they go and interview the individuals.
And this is all before Sedgepick arrives?
All before Sedgepick arrives at 3:37. At 3:30, I believe, in the transcript testimony of Deputy Stoddard, he communicated to his dispatch that they had these individuals stopped and detained, and they were waiting for something from Richland County. It is while they're talking to Mr. Hook, because Mr. Perez won't talk to them, Mr. Hook and Mr. Salisbury, that they get separately different inconsistent stories. Now that, almost second nature to police, is some indication that these guys are not giving you a true story and they might be hiding something. So they had a right to investigate that further and hold them for a reasonable amount of time, which was not that many more minutes longer, until Richland County communicated with them or the deputy arrived, when he had the specific information that it was not just any longer that it was Mr. Ferris's car and one of the three individuals in the car that made the threat, but it was specifically Mr. Ferris himself that made the threat with the gun, and Deputy Sedgepick had probable cause to arrest Mr. Ferris.
And did Lee Hook give his statement about the AK-47 being in the gun safe before or after Sedgepick arrived?
You're talking about Lee Hook?
Yes.
I believe that as well was before, because they, when Deputy Sedgepick arrived, the chronology in his testimony is that soon after he arrived, they also stopped Julie Hooks, and they had already had information from Lee Hooks about possible AK-47s. In fact, Mr. Mandel referred to the fact that Lee Hook was arrested for being a felon in possession. Well, they arrested him based on his own self-incriminatory statement that there were guns at the house he was staying at with Abdel Ferez. And then Julie Hook is stopped, and her statement comes in. That's after Sedgepick arrives, the Julie Hook statement, that she had purchased guns. They independently, going to the characterization of them as ordinary citizens, sure, maybe Detective Meyer inaccurately characterized them as ordinary citizens, but what the district court found, that there was sufficient other information in there about Julie and Lee Hook to inform the court that they were just not ordinary citizens. They had a close relationship with Abdel Ferez, and each of them had their own problems. Lee Hook was a felon. It was reflected. That was in the affidavit for the search warrant. And the fact that he admitted that there were guns that he was in possession of at Abdel Ferez's, and Julie Hook confirmed that. And then there are three independent things, quite independent of whatever it was that they said, that means that the characterization of whether they were ordinary citizens really is immaterial. That is that the officers found on Abdel Ferez a receipt for the gun safe, they found keys for a gun safe, and in checking with the True Value Hardware, they found that the receipt of his, which was at 4:02 p.m. on the very same day that Julie Hooks bought the AK-47 guns, she bought the guns 2 minutes before he bought the gun safe. So apparently she was in the company of him, as they were close associates. And it all fit consistently with the fact of what Lee and Julie Hooks were saying, that the guns would likely, there was a probability enough to issue that search warrant, that those guns that they said were there were in fact in Mr. Ferris's house in the gun safe. And then finally, as the 851 issue, as this court has noted before, 851 is not a challenge to 851. It's not jurisdictional. This court lacks jurisdiction to even consider that because he did waive the 851 challenge. He waived it, I say, because he not only failed to raise it at the plea hearing when it was addressed, that he had any problem with the notice, They failed to raise it at the sentencing, but he affirmatively at the plea hearing, when asked by the judge, the notice, the formal notice of enhancement, which is in the record, which was docketed, which met the requirements. The judge had that notice, and that is evidence from her conversation with the government and the defendant that she had the notice there. She asked me where, if there was a reference in the plea agreement to that enhancement, and I pointed out that the penalty enhancement was noted in there, the higher penalties of 30 years. She then addressed counsel and the defendant, Mr. Abdel-Ferez, and asked them if that was their understanding. And they indicated that, in fact, that was their understanding. They knew that that enhancement was there. Moreover, even if he did not waive the issue, that because of that very record, the challenge to the 851 notice is meritless based on that record and the fact that it is in the file. If there are any questions?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you.
Mandel, how much time does he have? 4 minutes?
Thank you.
Briefly, in response, there was no information communicated whatsoever to the officers at the scene prior to the arrival of Detective Sepchak. Nothing in the record supports that these inconsistent statements, which didn't bear on the investigation, were made before Sepchak arrived.
Except he said it was, I think, Stockard, or he made reference to a specific individual that testified to that.
My recollection is I don't believe that there was any time sequence put in conjunction with that. They had no knowledge that anyone else was coming, even. Julie Hooks was stopped. They found the gun receipt on her among the drug paraphernalia after 4 o'clock. That's when they knew she had purchased AK-47. It's incredulous to believe that Lee Hooks, sitting there trying to get out of the situation, is going to start blabbing about AK-47 before the police had any idea there were any AK-47s in existence. That conversation took well after Sepchak arrived. And again, I disagree with counsel with respect to whether or not the information contained in the application for the search warrant gave the judge the true flavor of the motivation for the statements that were being made to exculpate themselves from charges. Lee Hooks was a subject of an investigation of a felon in possession of a firearm. And Julie Hooks was saying he had the firearms, and none of this information was conveyed to the judge, only that they were ordinary citizens. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mandel. And you were appointed, were you not?
That is correct.
So the court thanks you for your efforts on behalf of your client. Next case for argument.